This Week in Radio Tech is supported by Violet Microphones on the web at violetusa.com and by the Broadcaster's Desktop Resource on the web at thebdr.net.
And now, our feature presentation. Twert.
Hey, I had to work and still do the show, so this week we're on the road at the NAB show in Las Vegas.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up,
Dad? Yeah, all your days are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
Hey, Frank Foti crashes the party. Plus, we've got Courtney Gould, Tony Timmott, and Steve Church.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
It's time for This Week in Radio Tech. Hello, I'm Kirk Harnack. We're glad you're with us, and we got a special show for you today. We are live at the NAB. Well, if you're listening to the podcast, maybe we're not live. But if you're watching us on the twit.tv network at live.twit.tv, we're live. So welcome on in.
Hey!
Doing a live shot here. Hey, first of all, we're going to jump right into the guests as soon as we introduce our co-host. Tom Ray is here from New York City, the Hudson Valley. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Kirk. I'm, feeling left out here, so I thought I'd do this to myself.
Thanks for joining us, Tom. Tom is the Director of Engineering at Buckley Broadcasting and WOR in New York. And also online with us is Chris Tarr from Milwaukee. Hi, Chris.
Good evening, Kirk, and I hope you're having a good time out there in Las Vegas this year.
We are. I hope both you and Tom have your questions ready because we've got a bevy of guests. And bevy number one is my boss. I'm very proud to say my friend. I've known this guy for a long time.
And Bruce Springsteen.
It's Frank Foti. Hi, Frank.
Kirk, how you doing,
buddy? Glad to have you here. Frank is the audio inventor, the audio designer of the Omnia audio processing line. And we've had Corny on the show a couple times. Cornelius Gould, yeah.
Yeah. The reason I mentioned Bruce Springsteen, because if you had Corny on the show, and for those of your viewers who may be familiar with the album Born to Run, that album cover of Clarence the Big Man, Clemens, and the Boss, Corny's our big man. So it's like, you know, we're trying to recreate what happened in 1975 all over again in the year 2010.
We're going to bring Corny on here in a few minutes.
Cool. Great.
We're going to talk to you for a few minutes, though.
Right now he's doing a sax solo on Jungle Land.
So, today something happened here by the way, we're broadcasting from the Telos Omnia Axia stand at the NAB show. Normally, I got to tell our listeners and viewers, this show is fairly brand agnostic. We talk about different technologies and not so much about brands. And every show I tell you that my employer is Telos Omnia and Axia, and they, you know, their kindness helps make this show possible. We're using a laptop that, you know, Telos provided to me, and I appreciate them doing that.
A few did?
Yeah, you provided the laptop.
Yeah. TRS-80.
Well, So, Frank.
Yes, sir.
This show is going to be about Telos Omnia and Axia because we're here in the stand.
Got it.
Yeah, so this is a one-hour commercial, folks.
Okay.
Tell us about what happened today, this afternoon.
Well, Kirk, I'm glad you did because it's probably best I come forward with some news, some breaking news. The commissioner of the NAB came over because our new product, the Omnia 11, is under investigation because one of its rack ears came out of the rack and speared the competition quite badly.
Really?
Yeah, it was penalized for clipping the competition. And so they sent in some investigators, and they came here to investigate the clipping, but their investigation showed that there was no distortion found whatsoever. Folks, I will be here all week. Make sure you try to see. Okay. No, but more to the point, this week we introduced our new flagship audio processor known as Omnia 11.
Here, I got a picture right here.
There you go.
The Omnia 11.
There it is, gang. There, see?
We've introduced it.
Sure. I'm happy to have introduced it. But This will replace the Omnia 6 as our flagship audio processor. Omnia 6 will not be going away. It'll basically just be batting number 2 in the batting order.
Okay.
And we, you know, as I'm sure people can by way of the internet, our website, or should people want to know, I'll be happy to tell them what the differences are. It's our next step in broadcast audio processing for the same amount of loudness. The audio is cleaner. We've been demonstrating that, to the point of where Corny and I have lost our voices for the most part, and also one of our other engineers, Rob Dye. And I think enough people saw and heard the demonstration, as well as understand about a number of the features that the NAB, I'm sorry, the gang from, what is it, BE Radio came along, and we have the recipients of one of the pick hits for 2010. That's Omni 11. So I guess the investigation by the commissioner of the NAB proved that, unlike Ben Roethlisberger of the Pittsburgh Steelers, he's allowed to get away with, beating up the competition. So that's the overview as to what's going on.
Let's talk about the Omni 11 for a few minutes then.
Sure.
What are some of the things that are different about it? And a lot of our viewers and listeners either own Omnia 1s or 3s,
right,
or original Omnias or 6s. So what's groundbreaking about the 11?
Well, to say that you turn the radio on today and that the audio is competitively loud is an understatement.
Yeah.
But a couple of years ago, I was interviewed by Paul McLean of Radio World, and he asked me, what can we do going forward with audio processing, which is a legit question. And I said, Paul, processing has gotten aggressive enough that we've got to find a way to dial back into it quality. So I embarked upon a couple-year research project where it was easy for me. It was a bit of an ego bruise, but that's another story. But the thing that I was able to observe is that when we take our product, like Omni 6, and push it, there were annoyances that were there. And one of our support engineers, a fellow by the name of Mark Manolio, had a song by Kelly Clarkson. And Mark said, the name of the song is called Because of You. And he said, Frank, when you can play the intro to the song and Kelly's voice through our product doesn't sound like you're frying eggs, you've got something. So Ms. Clarkson, myself, and eventually Corny set out to find a way to not only make that song sound okay, but it turned up a number of things in the audio processing algorithms, in this case, most notably the final limiter, where we were able to uncover the fact that the audio processor was generating audible intermod distortion.
We've talked about intermod distortion on the podcast before.
Right.
And this is when two things interfere with each other and create other products.
Yeah.
Other audio things.
That's one way of saying it, sure. In this case, what's happening is when the audio is getting into the clipper, the action of the clipper is generating unfriendly in-band harmonics and modulating other frequencies.
Ah, okay.
And, this has been a problem that a lot of people were, and for years, was always attributed to too much bass getting in, and when the bass would get into the clipper, would shove voice and mid-range and high frequencies in and out of the clipper to the point of where you'd get the center mod.
Okay.
Well, in the case of this particular song, there's no bass. It was just Kelly's voice and a piano.
Okay.
And we realized there's something else going on here, so like I say, a couple of years of research and development, we came up with a way, and it's for those of you that are going, well, Fody, he's just doing look-ahead limiting. No, we are not, and we are not having to employ 200 milliseconds of delay or any of the other wannabes who every 2 years find a need to bring out a top-of-the-line audio processor. We came up with a method to eliminate the clipper-induced intermod, and we're able to play Ms. Clarkson without any distortion and maintain competitive loudness.
Oh, wow.
So in addition to that, as we were working on that, Corny said, well, there could be some issues with intermod and the clipper. What about in the limiters? So he embarked upon that and dug into it, and sure enough was able to find more things to peel out of the algorithms to clean the audio up even more. And then when we put it all together, the sound that we're getting out of Omni 11 is the result.
I've heard a few demonstrations here, and one thing I've heard is that the input processor, the input AGC now, is really wide-ranging. Correct. You don't need any processor in front of this processor.
Anyone who says that they do, they probably need to seek counseling with a couch and people of that nature.
So this Omni 11 has got a wideband input processor.
I'll make it easy for you, Kirk.
Please.
The topology, when you look at it on the surface, looks very much like Omnia 6.
Okay.
But that's where the similarities end. Digging down into the algorithms of the wideband AGC, the multiband AGCs, the limiters, and the clipper, It's like taking a house, stripping it down to the, you know, the floorboards and renovating it and going, wow, well, look how much nicer it is. So, yes, for having better consistency over a wide range of audio levels as well as a wide range of content, Omni 11 will do the job. And I dare to have somebody say, no, you know, I need to stick this in front of it, or I need to do that. This thing is the complete all-in-one package.
When you demoed this thing to me, actually last September, you had some prototyping going on, and you played some songs that had some real, honest-to-goodness bass in them.
Right.
And most processors would, it wasn't earth-shattering after it got through, but the Omni 11, you felt this bass in your chest.
Yes, you do.
Can you tell us how that's happening?
Well, Kirk, here's the deal. If I tell you that, I'll have to kill you, okay? I'm of Sicilian nature.
Chris and I will help, Frank.
I have three cats at home.
Me?
Guys, I have three cats at home that had bit parts in The Sopranos. I live with Silvio Dante, Carmela Soprano, and Meadow Soprano. So if I tell, I'd be happy to tell you, but they'll start mixing up cement, and business will be taken care of by way of a horse's head by morning. So, no, seriously, again, in that case, and actually, if you're going to have Corny on, I'm sure he can go into deeper detail. But Corny took the bass managing function that deals with harmonics and clipping, and took it to a new level. And whereas we basically would have a static clipping threshold or some static functions as to how that worked. Corny put some smarts to it with regard to the dynamics of it, some adjustability of it on its own, and some other magic. And out of that, the Omni 11 is able to determine that, okay, maybe on this particular record I need to clip or manage the bass this way, and then another song that comes on where the content's different, it will change its whole behavior.
Huh.
And that's how we're able to yield consistent sound based on how it's set up from source to source.
Yeah. You know, it almost sounds like that what program directors want, music directors want, and what we're trying to give them is a way to make the radio station sound consistent from song to song, even though those songs had different mastering engineers and producers.
Oh, yeah.
So that the station can have an overall consistent signature.
Without question. And matter of fact, we've talked to more people this week that have said that the two formats that are the most challenging today are oldies, for one, and what they call, like, although they're not calling oldies anymore, it's like, you know, rock classics or something, that and actually adult contemporary, where they're playing everything from, you know, softer music from today all the way back to the 70s.
David Gates to Celine Dion.
You got it.
Out of Chicago.
You got it.
Okay. Hey, Tom Ray, you got any questions for Frank while I've got him corralled here?
It's nice to see you finally came out with a processor, Frank, that actually goes to 11, but I would like to, I'll be talking to Kirk about this. I'd like to demo that for our station in Hartford for our FM, because I think we're running an Omnia 6 EXI over there, and it's a great sounding processor. It makes the station sound great, but I really think, this is something I'd like to try.
We'd love for you to try.
And Chris Tarr, in up there in Entercom world. I know, Chris, you've got a couple of Omnis up there as well as some of the other guys. What question
do
you got?
I have a good mix of Optimods and Omnias. But, I know there's always this big, kind of the big battle with processors since the beginning of time has been loud and clean, pick one. So I'm really hoping that this eliminates that choice and we can have both at the same time.
Yes, you can.
You know, Frank, last September you kind of secretly tried this processor out in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And I remember a comment, the clean comment, from the engineer. Didn't he say it sounds effortlessly loud?
That's right.
And so many people I've described, okay, when processors really try to get loud, they sound like they're doing this.
Right.
Really trying to get loud. And the Omni 11's not like that.
And that comment, effortlessly loud, does apply. And also, I think, Kirk, in addition to Omni 11, Kirk's about to reveal
the
secret to the algorithms.
The secret to the algorithms. This is the secret. Let's see.
There you go.
Hey, Frank, I do have a question now. Is your secret available to make personal appearances?
Oh, yeah.
Actually, Olga has been in the booth
all week.
All week, but she just left, right?
Yeah, well, probably because her social calendar has been, filled up as of Monday morning.
Yeah. Hey, something else funny on the IRC channel. Somebody said, "Oh, it took you 2 years to make Kelly Clarkson sound good."
Well, I'll go as far as the technical aspects of it, but. You know, with regard to programming and content, I guess that's where I have to, step on the sidelines.
Frank, thank you very much for being on the show.
Kirk, thank you for the opportunity to be here. And, guys, I want to say to the three of you, as well as your viewers, what you guys are doing is tremendous. You know, it's our industry is one where, we got people that, if I may say so, give a damn. And it's good to see that there's people behind it and finding ways to communicate and bring more things together. And if there's anything I can do to help you guys in the future, please ask.
Frank, thanks again.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Leave the headphones. Take the cannoli.
We're going to keep him around.
The Spalzini business. I know it's Tartaglia all along. And in that case, we're Cook, it's an honor. The big man from the Omnia Street Band, Cornelius Gould.
Hey, how you doing, Kirk?
I'm glad you're here.
It's nice to be here.
So,
next to you.
The process you had a part in designing has won an award. Mm-hmm. Frank told us about that a bit. Tell us about a couple things that are rather innovative programming, processing algorithms that mm-hmm. you've included, so the technology side of this.
Okay. One of the most, overall in the Omni 11, we have in the multi-band AGC sections, including wideband AGC, intelligence built into the system where it's able to detect whether or not the material is too dense or not. And if it's too dense, the AGCs will tend to pull back on the on their parameters. And if as things lighten up a bit, they become a bit more active.
So some songs are already recorded with a lot of density in them?
Yes.
And you're able to detect that mm-hmm. and change what the processor is doing?
Yes.
All right. How does that help the end listening experience?
Well, if you don't do that, what ends up happening is when you have a song with smashed up content in there, the processor will end up smashing it up even more.
Okay.
Making it sound horrible.
Think of a song, the difference between a song by America and a song by Smash Mouth.
Yes.
Would that be a good...
Although Smash Mouth's music, by today's standards, is pretty open.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
So who's an example of a really dense song?
How about from 1972, Go All the Way with the Raspberries and Eric Turner?
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
what would it do with that?
The raspberries weren't that big of a problem because they didn't do any hard clipping. It was a lot of compression on there, so it was dense in that regard.
Yeah.
But a lot of material we're thinking about now were a lot of modern rock tunes were like this, where you have, when you rip it into on a Adobe Audition or something and you look at the waveform and it's this solid rectangle on your screen.
Right.
There's no variation in levels. There's no valleys, and it's all one big, giant peak.
Right.
And that's the material I'm talking about.
So you're finding ways to check this density mm-hmm. and back off your processing, mm-hmm. and this gives the listener a more consistent experience, but I guess it doesn't over-process things.
Right.
So isn't that what some radio stations suffer from nowadays? I mean,
yes.
Irrespective of the brand of processor, you've got songs that are really dense that just come out sounding... bad on the air because the processor is adjusted for maybe a more medium song or even a lighter song to make mm-hmm. to bring it up good and loud.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. So we have that. The wideband AGC is able to detect what's going on within the audio spectrum
uh-huh.
and make decisions as to how it's going to actually handle the audio. The idea being you could build more density using the wideband AGC without pumping and wheezing on bass notes and things like that.
Gotcha. So, on one of the first, just give me a couple of sentences on how did you get started in this experimenting with processing? Weren't you building stuff as a kid?
Yes. Back when I was about 12 years old, I started and built my first pirate station, which was a little AM station that didn't get anywhere.
Oh, okay.
And
as long as it didn't get anywhere.
Yeah. And it was broadcasting around. And then I figured out how to do FM. And when I was on FM, uh-huh. the first thing I noticed was, hey, this station sounds like the record. Which is pretty cool, but everybody else sounds better than the record. And it's like, how do they do that? And, did a little poking around, and I found out about these things called compressors and limiters, and other people that were close to have friends in the business would come to me and say, hey, you know what you need on your station? You need a multi-band compressor. It's like, what's that? You know, it's like, well, it splits it into bands and does its magic and put it back together again.
Right.
Oh, cool. How much does one of those things cost? And eventually I found that. It's like, okay, how do you build one of these things? You know.
So, hey, didn't you write a series of articles about your experiments and explaining audio processing head to tail?
Mm-hmm.
Where would people go online to find these articles?
You can find those articles on my website, cgould.com. And there's a section called Downloads.
Okay.
And that's where I have things, whether it's presets or whatever. In this case, it's a series of articles I wrote in PDF format, each one.
If before you get out of here today, if you will leave me a note with the URL or just...
Sure.
We'll put it on the show notes, because this was a series of articles that ran in... It was a Radio Guide?
Yes.
Radio Guide magazine, month after month after month, explaining from head to tail all about audio processing.
Yes.
So that was a great tutorial, and I read most of it.
Oh, cool. Well, thanks.
Thank you, Corny.
All right.
Appreciate you being here. Thanks very kindly.
Cool.
We're going to bring in Tony Timmitt next. Tony's from Germany, and so get your German questions ready here. Hey, Tony, how are you?
Hello, Kirk. How are you?
I'm fine.
So let me introduce you to the audience. This is Anton, or Tony Timmitt, from Freising, Germany.
Hello.
Glad to have you. I've been to your house, and it's just lovely.
Oh, it's a lovely area where I live, yes.
Yes, it's absolutely gorgeous. Freising is close to Munich. And you live in this area because you worked with the Fraunhofer, did you?
Yes, actually I did. Fraunhofer is located in Nuremberg. That's not far from the Munich area.
Yeah.
And I was working there for 4 years in the area of the development of the MPEG-1 standard.
Okay.
And that also comprises the Layer 3, which everybody knows, I think.
Wait a minute. Are you the inventor of Layer 3?
No.
Oh.
Actually, there's not one inventor.
Oh.
And if you would name one, then this would be Karl-Heinz Brandenburg. That was the man behind it. But, of course, there's a huge development team who was involved in getting this all done.
But you were part of the team that invented MP3.
I was part of this big team, very big team, yes.
So how did you come to work with Telos and bring some expertise here?
Well, at some day Steve Church showed up in Munich, actually in Nuremberg, at the Fraunhofer research lab, and he wanted to license Layer 3 for his products.
Yeah.
Actually, for the Zephyr, that was the first audio codec. And he did so.
Yeah.
And so I got him to know there. And I was always wanting to go to America for at least some time and live somewhere abroad, because that sounds interesting to me.
And you chose to live in Cleveland, Ohio,
and I
right?
chose to live in Cleveland, Ohio, because it's somewhere in America at least.
So, what is happening nowadays in audio codecs? What's the latest thing, and what kind of a bit rate can we get? What kind of quality can we get with some of the new developments?
Well, the quality has always been very good. If you have bit rates available that are like 120 kilobits or maybe even 96 kilobits per second, with the new codecs that the Fraunhofer people now sell, this is AAC, variants of AAC. You are probably good at a transparent quality at around 96 kilobit per second.
Now, you mentioned variants of AAC, and I sure hear a lot of variants like HE.
Yes.
HEAC V2.
Yes.
And then LD, a low delay.
Yes.
And then ELD.
Yes, that's a combination of the high efficiency and the low delay AAC variant.
So, and then how do these compare with just regular good old AAC that came out a few years ago?
Well, the high efficiency, it's really difficult to explain in all detail, but the high efficiency uses a special scheme for the high frequencies to reproduce them without spending too much bits. So it gives you even more efficiency. And the low delay version, as the name says, is a even more low delay variant of this.
Give us a bit of a comparison between, let's say, MP3 at 128 or AAC at 128. What is the difference we're going to hear in these?
I mean, as an average listener, you probably won't hear anything. But
we have a very sophisticated audience.
Okay, so the experts say that layer 3 at 128 kilobits per second is about as good as AAC, a good variant of AAC at maybe 80 kilobits per second.
Okay,
so you save a few bits.
Now, I have an application on my iPad that is letting me tune into internet stations that are at 48 kilobits, and they're using HEAC V2.
Yes.
So why is this extra efficient? Why are they sounding pretty good?
Because this is at the core, this is really a mono signal. Okay. And there's some additional information sent along with this mono signal.
Is this what they call parametric stereo?
Yes.
Okay.
This is this. This okay. is this feature. And then it just gives some panning information for the different frequency bands, where to pan them with regard to left and right.
Okay. One of the things that Tony has been working on with our company, and a lot of companies are going this direction, is they're getting away from an ISDN connection
right.
and going to an IP connection.
Right.
So you did a lot of the programming for ISDN connections.
That's true.
And now you're programming for IP connections. What are some of the big differences in thinking about how a codec works over ISDN versus how it works over IP?
Yeah. I mean, I have to say that ISDN is really a very, very good technology. I mean, if you establish an ISDN connection, you own the channel. It's all yours. Nobody else can interfere with it. You have a synchronous signal. So that makes it easy to have a very low delay over this ISDN.
Could you describe this as it's clocked from
the
phone company?
From the phone company.
And so with ISDN, you know exactly when the next set of data is coming
right,
along.
Right.
No waiting, bunching up or spreading
right.
out.
Yeah. Okay. The audio is always routed the same way.
Okay.
There's no rerouting possible. And it's centralized. The clock is centralized. The delay is very low. There is a guarantee of a bit rate that's kind of 10 to the minus 6, something like this, bit error rate.
Okay.
And whereas if you compare this to the IP world,
uh-huh.
I mean, it depends where you are, but if you are in the public internet, there is no guarantee whatsoever for anything. So if you want to get some sort of quality over the public internet, you need to put more intelligence in the box.
So you were in a box that you're working with. You are doing what kind of intelligence?
Well, you are monitoring the quality by having the two boxes talk to each other, forth and back, so that they exchange information about what is the bit rate, what is the jitter maybe,
the jitter?
what is the number of lost packets that you have,
okay.
things like that.
Yeah.
So these two boxes, sender and receiver, they will negotiate the optimum coding scheme, the optimum bit rate, and the optimum buffering at the receiver end
right.
to give you a best, experience.
Okay. Awesome. So what are you looking for in the next couple of years in terms of what you'll be coding and working on? Do you see some even newer technologies appearing?
I guess in the future, there will the telephone companies which go away from ISDN, which discontinue ISDN over the years now, they will have to come up with something that actually gives you sort of at least a same quality of service than you had with ISDN.
So you're thinking IP with some quality of service guarantees?
Yes, that will come.
Okay.
I think like something like MPLS.
Yeah.
So then you are on the safe side again.
Hey, Tom Ray, you have a question for the inventor of MP3? He's right here.
You know, it's several things came to mind, and there's nothing really at the moment. I'm going to defer to Chris Tarr and see if I can come back and come up with something, because I had a couple, and I want to see how I can word them to make to have it make sense and have it actually come out to be a short answer.
Mr. Tarr, you're on the hot seat. What's your question for the inventor of MP3?
I don't know if I have a question as much as a statement. I use the Comrex version of these streaming boxes for broadcasting audio from our satellite receiver down to a different radio station. And we're using, I actually started out using 256K MP3 and switched to a 64K AAC high-efficiency codec, and no one knew the difference. It just amazes me how these codecs are able to, as they get more and more refined, be able to cram so much more information in such a small space. And we're finding that in the case of a 64K codec, over T1s or something like that, there are very little problem with jitter or anything else. And so I'm wondering, what is kind of the consensus on acceptable quality? What are you finding people are happy with in terms of AAC? Is it 64? Is it 96? Is it 128? What's the feedback you're getting on the types of bit rates that people are getting comfortable with for broadcast?
I guess this depends on the audio. I mean, on the programming, if you have like a classic station, probably they want to have a little bit more quality than if it's like, I don't know, house music, I would think.
Yeah.
For a stereo signal, I would expect that 48 kilobit per second is perfectly fine. for most listeners.
Would you call that entertainment quality?
Sort of.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
I mean, I know that there's lots of testing out and done during the standardization of AAC and all the other coding schemes, and they are very highly trained listeners listening to the source material versus the coded material, and they come up with all sorts of grades, and they are looking for the point where it's actually indistinguishable from the original. And this is, I guess this is probably the case at 96 kilobit per second for AAC. So then at that point, it's really, really, really good. And if you want to, you know, allow some degradation from that, like, you save a few kilobits per second. Yes.
One thing that we asked to Skip Peasy when he was on the show last time, I asked Skip, why is Fraunhofer still working on codecs that work at lower and lower bit rates? Like they have this new one, this sort of a universal codec that works okay at 24 and even 20 kilobits.
Yeah.
And because internet connections tend to be getting better. But I forgot about mobile internet connections, which more and more and more and more mobile users, and I don't know if the infrastructure is keeping up as well with the number of mobile subscribers.
Yeah, that's, of course. I mean, mobile subscribers are getting more and more and more, but also the efficiency gets better. So we see this in the Wi-Fi world, right? You get one standard after the other. You had, like, I don't know, 52 kilobits right now, and I don't know, you will soon have 150 kilobits per second available on Wi-Fi, and the same is probably the case with the wireless telephony. So that's, I mean, it's getting better on many, you know, corners of this whole problem. So you get better codecs, you get more bitrate, so you can serve more people.
Gotcha.
And I think in the very far distance, pretty much everything will be wireless.
What can you help us? Are there any rules of thumb about cascading algorithms? Cascading MPEG?
In general, this of course is a problem because you get the degradation. The findings are, if people have done, of course, the research in this area, the findings are that the biggest loss is at the second encoding. So if you encode once, it's good. Mm-hmm. If you encode twice, you lose quite a bit, or at least a certain amount of quality. If you encode a third time, you lose again a little bit, but just a little bit.
Okay.
And then after the fourth time, you lose again a little bit, but it saturates it.
But it's that first to second time that's the biggest.
That's the biggest.
So does that mean that if you have to encode the original audio, you really need to do it at the highest bit rate possible?
Yeah, that's of course a good idea.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Okay. And that's what most broadcasters do. I mean, they try to get the contribution audio to be as good as possible,
right?
Because they know for digital radio, it's going to be transmitted at some low bit rate.
Yes. Huh? Yes.
Okay. Super. Tony, thank you for your expertise.
Thank you, Kirk.
I appreciate it very much. Good to have you. And guess who's behind you? Our boss.
Oh, the boss.
Hey, Tom and Chris, yes. Coming up next is Steve Church. And Steve had some kind of a function today. Hello, Steve.
Why, hello, Kirk.
Glad you're here.
Hey, Steve.
Such a pleasure to see your smiling face.
Let's see if we can see a couple others. Tom Murray is here. Say hi, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Steve. Congratulations on the award. Couldn't have happened to a better guy. And for those listening, those who may not know, with Steve's first telephone hybrid, I believe it was the Telos 10, you transformed the landscape for talk radio as we know it today, just from the very simple standpoint that we now didn't have to hook up a couple of wires to a speakerphone from the phone company, and we had real telephone audio and real announcer quality on the air. And I just think that award was very, very well deserved, Steve. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Although I'd have to disagree with you a bit on the announcer quality. It wasn't that good, but sure, it was motivated by the fact that at the time I was doing a weekend call-in show on what was WFBQ in Indianapolis. So it was FM station, and the program director was always complaining about, you know, we should have telephones on the air. They sound so bad. So I didn't want him to cancel my show. I had a pretty strong motivation to, you know, fix the problem. I was probably one of the very few people around who was, you know, on the air taking telephone calls, and at the same time had a you know, technical background, so I could, you know, try to do something about it. And so that was the motive for it. And yes, anybody that, you know, knows a bit about that station knows that it's way out in the suburbs, and it has about 15-mile-long telephone lines to the nearest central office. So those were terrible telephone lines. They were noisy and had bad fidelity and just generally bad. So, but I didn't know that at the time. I just figured, okay, this is how, you know, these, you know, choke network lines sound, you know. And so I had to work real hard to try to, you know, make a box that made those lines sound good. And then later I discovered that, you know, making those lines sound good would make other lines sound really good.
So. Steve, it's not hard to read about the history of Telos and digital phone hybrids. Where do you think we are now and where we're going? You gave a talk the other day about voice over IP, and I'm really curious to know where you think that technology and broadcasters and the general public are all going to be moving along together here.
Well, the brief answer is voice is going to be just another internet application over, you know, obviously IP. One of the points I made in that talk is that I don't know how many of your listeners caught this, but this is a pretty revolutionary thing. AT&T has petitioned the FCC to ask them to order the switch off of the traditional telephone network, the public switch telephone network.
We actually had a show about that.
Okay. Yeah. Then your listeners know about it. They're among the educated elite because they listen to your program, Kirk.
So if AT&T is switching this off, what's my mom going to do for a phone line?
Well, there'll be, of course, though, during the transition, there'll be, I mean, first, this is going to take a long time, the switching off and so forth. And, but during the time after that, there'll be some small box, I suppose, like the boxes Vonage provides, for example, which you know, plug into the IP network and deliver a, you know, an RJ11 for whatever phones they still have around. This is a million, multi-million device product categories. So it's not like it's going to transition overnight.
So think about voice over IP for broadcasters. Steve, there's a couple of partners around here at the NAB show that are developing software to work with voice over IP products for broadcasters. And when I saw, for example, Broadcast Bionics is just across the aisle over there.
Right.
And when I saw what they are doing with our system, the Telos VX, it really started to open my eyes to what the possibilities
are. Absolutely. You get the taste of the future. It's what I've always said about, I mean, not about IP specifically, but it certainly applies to IP, is that, you know, the first thing that happens when you get a new technology, the first thing that happens is you replicate the functionality of whatever technology people were using before.
Yeah,
but you do it cheaper or you do it more conveniently or whatever, and you get some benefit, of course, or the transition doesn't happen at all. But then you get the platform in place, right? And then people start to understand how to use the new platform, how to build new things on it. And just as you say, Kirk, you go over to see the Broadcast Bionics people, you see just a taste of the future where, you know, smartphones. I mean, you got now smartphones with a screen on there and whatever else. I mean, smartphones are going to keep getting smarter and more sophisticated and so on. Well, this opens up a window into the studio from people out in the field. So it's not just now call up, we put you on hold, and when we get to you, you can talk on the air.
Right.
Now it's you can be sending SMS messages back and forth. Until you go on the air, you can the guys on the air can be polling people who are waiting, and while you're waiting, you can get messages, individual messages, like how long you have to wait before you'll be on the air. I mean, this might open, not only does it open a richer kind of interaction, but it also, I think, is going to draw in this and some other things that we have in the VX, the very easy way to automatically record and that kind of thing. It's going to draw in participants to talk shows that wouldn't otherwise be there. I mean, if you think about this, I mean, everyone that does talk shows knows this. The participants that you get on the air are, you know, people who have a lot of time on their hands. You know, it's pensioners. I mean, think about it. Someone that, you know, has got a life, you know, a professional, a doctor or somebody, you know, he's got a life. He's not going to call and, you know, wait on hold for half an hour until it's his turn on the air, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in order to encourage, you know, regular people to be participating, you know, you got to make it easier for them, for one thing. And for another, you know, it just has to have a different feel. And, you know, what you said at the beginning of our conversation here, that, you know, the Telos 10, really, I think it did. I mean, modestly, it's probably true that having better telephone quality, especially as, you know, FM, of course, grew to become the dominant radio media, having better telephone quality, audio quality, fidelity and full duplex and everything, this actually encouraged the growth of, you know, talk format programming. And, well, one thing we saw, of course, I mean, you saw music shows start to take a lot more phones on their DJs, taking requests and all that sort of thing. So the tech actually drove a pretty significant change in the program.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think here you're going to see again, and that was just from fidelity. I mean, a simple, you know, make the phone sound kind of acceptable. That was a pretty minor thing. So now here's a tech that works with mobile phones, catches people where they are, can be more interactive. You can have an application on a PC, maybe a Facebook plugin. I mean, who knows? I mean, there's all kinds of things. Again, that's why I said you build the platform and people will come.
Yeah. And during your talk, you mentioned some codecs that phones will be using, or what we think of as phones now.
Yes.
What's going to happen to quality with that?
Well, it's going to get better, no question. You get a taste of it now if you use, for example, Skype, or if, which is voice over IP, of course, or if you use this new application I just discovered called Line 2 for the iPhone. That uses a better quality codec, too. The key to this is that IP is codec agnostic. You can run any codec over IP, right? And you can't, with the switch telephone network, you with an analog phone, you just take what codec they give you, of course, at the central office. Over ISDN, people in broadcast, of course, realize you can put different codecs over that 64 kilobit channel. Well, now you got a smartphone that's connecting to the telephone network, not by 64 kilobit or even much lower bit rate channel, but you have an IP connection. All these smartphones, of course, they have an IP connection. And that's what allows these applications like Skype and Line 2 to work on smartphones. It's bypassing completely the circuit switch network and just going in. Well, it can interact. I shouldn't say bypass completely. That's overstating it. It can interact with the traditional network, but it can also just go straight IP to IP. And, okay, when you're straight IP to IP, you can put whatever codecs on you want. And, well, of course, you can use better quality ones that have, you know, full fidelity, wideband, you know, good quality. And sure, there are a lot of codecs out there that are like, okay, the one that we're using right now, the one that's in Skype, right?
We're using Silk.
Silk. There we go. And apparently the codec in this Line 2 application is pretty good. Google Voice has got some pretty good codec. So the future is, and I see on TV the advertisements for Vonage. Now Vonage is promoting better speech quality. So the reputation that early VoIP had for poor quality, that was because they really had to be conservative about using bandwidth, and they used very low bitrate, bad quality codecs. But this transition is happening right now as we're standing here, better quality codecs. And so as to what this means for us as broadcasters, people using smartphones with better codecs, and if we have proper equipment back at the studio side to receive these things without having it transition through the switch telephone network, we're going to have an opportunity to have better quality from mobile phones. I mean, right now, mobile phones, you know, every time you put a mobile phone on the air, it's, oh, geez, that sounds terrible. Can you find a fixed line phone?
Yeah.
Right. But this is going to change. It's going to be the other way around. You get a mobile phone, you're going to have the possibility to have one of these wideband codecs in it, and they're going to... When you get a call from one of these phones, you're going to say, ah, boy, this is, you sound great. And you're going to welcome those calls,
yeah.
As opposed to wish they'd, you know, finish up and get off so we can get onto a real phone.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris Tarr, have you got a question? We're going to wrap it up in a few minutes, but Chris has been waiting by in Milwaukee.
No, I've actually been very fascinated with what you're saying, and I'm intrigued by, you know, what I'm hearing about the potential future of, you know, we go back to what Tom Ray said with the original Telos box making it sound like announcers were on the air. I think in this case, we're getting to the point where it actually will be that way. And so I'm actually just very fascinated with what you're saying about the codecs and you know, you're right. It's we're getting very close to the point where everything is just bits on a network. And now it's less about the way we deliver these bits and more about the way that we package them and the way we encode them and decode them and things like that. So no questions, more just that was very fascinating to hear your take on that and where you think it's going. And I think it's right on.
Well, in the big picture, that's where it's going. That's absolutely true. Fortunately, you know, you don't need to wait for a big organization like a telephone company to say, we're going to give you a better codec, because IP lets individual users decide, even on a one-by-one, case-by-case, I'm going to do it, you know, I'm going to install this better codec software application, whatever, on my phone. And that one guy, you know, now will have better quality on the air, and then the next guy, and so on and so on. You don't have to wait for some big, you know, decision by a committee or a telephone company or something like that. SIP, this technology that's used to interconnect, I don't want to run over on time here. Kirk, how are we doing?
Two or three minutes.
Okay, then I'll try to squeeze in my final thoughts into that 2 or 3 minute time. SIP. It's called Session SIP, is short for Session Initiation Protocol. This is how IP, voice over IP calls are set up. And one of the characteristics of SIP is that there's what's called codec negotiation. So you got two endpoint devices, and you got a series of codecs, whatever they may be, on those two devices. SIP does a negotiation which chooses the best codec that the two have in common, and chooses that codec. So you can see how that characteristic of SIP allows the incremental improvement of IP telephony without waiting for a big committee decision or corporate decision by a telephone company or whatever.
We've seen actually what you just described in Skype, as the different codecs are available. When you make a Skype call, they negotiate.
There
the
you
best
go.
Thing.
There you Excellent, go. Kirk. You perfect example. And let me just close by saying one other thing, which is, here we're talking, because you asked the question, you wanted me to be a visionary, okay? So I gave you a visionary answer. But IP, just using it within the studio as an infrastructure for moving, you know, calls between telco and multiple studios, if you got a multiple studio installation and so on, this has a lot of advantages in terms of cost and convenience and number of plugs and everything, you know, before you start to consider, you know, the next big thing, which is getting high fidelity and richer interaction with, you know, people out in the field. Just the very basic and simple step of moving to an IP-based network within the studio for the telephone system, you get very immediate advantages, you know, cost and what I just said. Then you've got the platform. Then you're ready. Then it's a software update that gives you the capability to have that richer interaction and better fidelity and so forth.
Cool. Steve, thank you so much.
Been a pleasure.
Appreciate you being here. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Hey, Tom Ray, thanks for joining us.
Am I dismissed?
You're dismissed.
Wow, thank you.
See you later. Take care.
Later.
Appreciate the opportunities, too, that you've given us here to get this done. Tom Ray, thanks for joining us from the Hudson Valley in New York.
Well, thanks for transporting me out to Vegas tonight, Kirk. I appreciate that, and we'll see you next week.
And Chris Tarr, thanks for joining us from the frozen cold of Milwaukee.
Hey, it was 78 degrees today. It's not cold anymore.
Oh, wow. Hey, and thanks for the folks at the Twit Network for engineering the show. We certainly appreciate it. And thank you, listeners, for listening. We're going to have a few show notes. We'll especially put Corny Gould's articles in there about audio processing. Very educational. And I'll also link you to some of Steve Church's white papers about IP telephony. They're very interesting and a good way to educate yourself. So, again, thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time on This Week in Radio Tech.
That's all the bandwidth we can pilfer this week. Another tort has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This week in Radio Tech.
Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show.
Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes Store.
Soliciting is strictly encouraged. If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here.
Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny Lopez Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.